Welcome to Turkey Crossing, everyone. This is Paul Bogush, and thank you for stopping by to hang out with me while we talk about how to get our kids to solve problems, collaborate, create, innovate, dialogue, and get their imaginations cranking, all while using Classroom 2.0 tools and not forgetting that the most important thing in the world is not an online connection, but a teacher-student connection. So relax, close your eyes, unless you're driving, eating, or skydiving, and open your mind for another edition of Turkey Crossing. So, that's my new opening. What do you think? Decided to go with a little bit something a little different for a change. And I'm still searching for that opening that I'll keep for all the shows. So if anybody out there has that sound studio and would like to produce one for me, send it my way. So I'm looking for now, now that I'm almost up to podcast number 20, going for more of a professional sort of sound. And especially, I mentioned this in the past, I listened to the PD2Go show, and man, the beginning of their shows, it's sweet, very professional. But anyway, I hope you liked the hee-haw at the beginning. It took me a couple of cuts to get that just perfect so that the speakers weren't rattling on the playback. But I hope you appreciate it. And I'll tell you, that is what actually inspired this podcast, is the hee-haw at the beginning. And I was trying to figure out what the heck I was going to do this week, and I decided I'll do a podcast about hee-haw. And doing it a little differently this week. I actually wanted to try to get out some complete thoughts on this one. So I did bike out to where I normally would turn around, and I've stopped biking, and I'm off on the side of the road to see if it might actually help me stay on track a little bit better. Whenever I'm biking, I'm looking for cars and looking for birds and looking for trees and looking at rocks and looking for turtles and everything else, and I kind of get a little distracted. So we'll do a little experiment. And I also wanted to get off because hee-haw is one of the most important things in my classroom, and I wanted to make sure I got this one straight and didn't mumble-jumble for 20 minutes. And by hee-haw, I simply mean humor. Humor is a huge part of my classroom. It is one of the most important tools I have as a teacher, and I think it's one of the most underutilized, underused tools in schools. I really started thinking seriously about using humor in a classroom and researching it and implementing it in a purposeful way. I know that all sounds strange. You think that you should just get up in front of class and tell a joke once in a while, but no, this is a serious subject, and it really is. But I started thinking about this when the kids are talking in class, and they inevitably talk about different teachers, and I know that a lot of times teachers will immediately say, we're not going to talk about so-and-so. I do let them go a little bit because I don't see it as a complaining session, but more of like a therapy session. And, if you had a son or daughter come to you and say, so-and-so is really bothering me, you'd let them talk. And so in letting them talk, I came to the conclusion, a thought popped in my head, and I said, why don't teachers laugh more? Really? And maybe everybody listening to this podcast laughs with their kids, and maybe everybody works in a school that's full of humor and high spirits, but I know with the people I've met, I've become a little discouraged by how much time they spend laughing with their kids. I did a very informal, somewhat secretive survey last year, too. I asked some kids to go out and just simply over the course of an entire day, 7 periods, count how many times there was laughter in the classrooms. And my very small, very unscientific survey, the average was like less than 1. I don't remember exactly what the decimal point was, but it was less than 1 time per class. I don't care if you're given a quiz. You're doing the directions. When the kids walk into the room, there can be something humorous to kind of break the ice. But good jokes do make you perform better in the classroom. That's just a fact. And I promise that if each one of you started off every morning with a hee-haw, either to yourself in the mirror or with your kids in the classroom, your day would be better. And so I figure, what the heck? Let's give it a shot right now. I'm going to count to three, and I want you to hee-haw. And I want you right now, take inventory of how you feel right now. All right, you got it? See how you feel. On the count of three, we're going to give a hee-haw. You ready? One, two, three. Hee-haw! Now, we're going to have to do that again because not all of you did it. You driving the K car out there in the West Coast. You just sat back and you didn't do it. All right, this time I'm going to listen for you. You ready? One. No, I'm going to join you. One, two, three. Hee-haw! Come on now. Not all of you took part. I'm telling you. You walk in the first day of your class. First day of school. You don't say a word to your kids. You walk silently to the front of the room. You look up. And you give a hee-haw. And you just pause for a moment. And then invite the kids to hee-haw with you. I promise you, your entire year will be different. The very first thing you've done with your kids is engage them with humor. And the entire year will end up being different. You know, you can't engage kids if you first don't relieve them of stress and make them feel comfortable. And that's what humor does. And I know a lot of us have kids that come from a really tough background, and we don't always have control over the stress in their personal lives, but we do have control over the stress in the classroom. And that hee-haw will, or whatever you might want to have it be, will have it, you know, will help break some of that stress or get rid of some of that stress. You know, and there's actually, you know, humor is a subject that's starting to be researched more and more right now, and there's a few different theories of humor. The first theory of humor basically is the one that it's when you're laughing about something that's unexpected, and I think this one is most common. You know, if you're just walking down the hallway of your school and all of a sudden the teacher next door walks into the hallway dressed as a rabbit, you know, you're going to let out a chuckle. It's something that's unexpected. You didn't see it coming. And, you know, automatically you laugh. It catches you off guard. You know, there's that, you're telling a joke, and there's that unexpected twist at the end that you didn't see coming. It's going to make you laugh. The other theory of humor, the relief theory, is when we laugh about things that are stressful to us, when we laugh about things that might make us sad, when we purposely kind of crack a joke at something that depresses us. You know, people could say and do things that they would never actually do in real life when they use this kind of humor. It allows us to confront our fears and frustrations and anxieties. And, you know, when that kid is going up in front of the class and they're all nervous, or not even before the kid goes up, if the class has some kind of upfront class presentation, if you're cracking a joke, you know, about the presentations and about how everyone is so scared, automatically everyone lightens up. It's really amazing when everybody can see that they have that same fear. It's been made light of, and now everyone can approach it with a different perspective. It's really cool. The third theory of humor is superiority. And if you notice, I've named the second two theories, but I haven't named the first one. Can't remember the name of it. But the third one is superiority, and that's the classic, you know, the kid who's always sarcastic, the bully. You know, they're trying to put someone down. And, you know, it's the one theory that there's just, you know, research shows there's no place for it in a classroom. It's always at the expense of someone. And a lot of times what I've found in giving out some other informal surveys is that it's one that kids easily recognize as funny. And, you know, there's teachers who do this all the time who are sarcastic and will put down kids, you know, trying to be funny. And other kids on the team will think it's funny, but, you know, it's funny until it's directed at you. It also doesn't bring a cohesiveness in the classroom. So while you're making a joke at someone's expense, yeah, it's funny. It doesn't do anything to improve the academic performance and relationship in your classroom. It's also important to realize that just because someone doesn't laugh, doesn't mean your humor is not effective in the classroom. Laughter is not a sign of humor. And I'm going to put something in your head now that if you remember it the next time you talk to someone, it's going to annoy the heck out of you. Notice how many times someone smiles or laughs when you talk to them. All right? I'm promising you, it's going to annoy the heck out of you. You know, if you actually stop and notice, people are always laughing. You know, a little tiny laugh or smile when you're talking about nothing that you're trying to, you know, nothing humorous or funny. And, you know, it's a way that we keep one another on cue, but it's kind of just that proof that just because someone laughs doesn't mean it's funny. Just because someone doesn't laugh doesn't mean it's good humor. So don't rely on a class full of kids rolling on the floor with their bellies shaking as a sign of whether or not humor is working. Sometimes the jokes and humor that gets the least amount of laughter ends up being the most productive. And you also have to remember that laughter changes your body. It produces all sorts of hormones and chemicals that surge through your body. I mean, the way it affects your brain when they've hooked up brains to the EEGs and they've told the person a joke, you know, and they can measure this stuff in milliseconds or whatever, you can actually watch, you know, the brain activity whip around your entire head and engage all parts of the brain to get the joke. It's pretty cool. I mean, the whole brain pulls together to get a joke. And there's not many things you can do in which your whole brain works together to come to a final conclusion. But just, you know, a joke, a simple piece of humor, it gets your brain doing that. It's pretty cool. I mean, there's studies where they've hooked people up hooked them up to stuff. Maybe they didn't hook them up to stuff, but they were doing a test. And they found that if people watch a comedy movie, their blood flow actually increases. The lining in the blood vessels actually changes, and your blood flow increases. But not like, it's like 20%, 25%. If you watch a movie that's sad, your blood flow decreases. Isn't that cool? I mean, just being humorous, beginning a class, man, I mean, just increases the kid's blood flow. And I think that's awesome that you're not just affecting their mood, but you're affecting like what's going on in your body. And you know, other research has shown that if you, I don't know, even on a day, let's say you know you got something that you're just not going to make it funny. It's just boring as heck. And, you know, sometimes teachers will be like, I'm going to teach them how to do an introduction to a paragraph today, and there's just nothing exciting about that. Just flat out, here it is. You know, research shows if you start off the period with doing something funny, that actually carries through the class. And you could have the most boring lesson on writing introductions, but no one will remember it that way. You know, people will remember it as an interesting class because that humor from the beginning of the class ends up carrying it over, and you end up with a neat kind of teachable moment, and the kids are ready to suck it in. And you know, of course, humor helps you bond with kids. You know, one of the most important things, I've said it before, is that for a teacher to develop a bond with their kids, and you know, using that humor on the first day of school, I think is spectacular. And I'm actually going to podcast about what I do on my first day of school in a couple of weeks. Out here in Connecticut, we don't start until that last week of September 1st in September. But, you know, if you can get the kids to laugh, they're automatically on your side from the beginning of the year. And again, you know, research shows that if you laugh together, you end up with a bond. You have that sense of solidarity with a group. You know, you laugh with someone and you automatically have something in common. Automatically. You know, you can be on, you know, you can walk into a meeting, or, you know, even if it's a kid who you're going to, you know, been causing problems for you all year long, and you say, let's talk during lunch or whatever. You open up with a joke and automatically you're both on the same side. You know, you're both together. And if you haven't tried that, it's so cool. The next time you have that knucklehead who's driving you crazy and you need to talk to him, make them smile before you say a word, or before you talk about whatever you're going to talk about. It's amazing the difference it has. Absolutely amazing the difference that just sharing a laugh has. You know, I mean, think about it in your life. The people that you share laughs with, it's hard to get mad at them. It's hard to do wrong by them. It's, you know, it really builds that bond.
We interrupt this podcast to inform you that the sponsors have decided to eliminate the next 5 to 10 minutes of the podcast. Paul lost his focus, had no idea where he was going, and hemmed and hawed and stuttered and mumbled and bumbled. We now return you to the podcast.
All right. So anyway, again, humor is an important tool to establish a learning environment. And I think another thing that's kind of cool about that learning environment that's formed is that, you know, after a laugh, everyone kind of draws a little closer, don't know exactly why, and, you know, people start to perceive you and your class and one another in a totally different way, and ultimately, that perception becomes the permanent perception of you and your classroom, so that whenever someone walks into your classroom, automatically, they have good spirits, and they have the positive vibe and the positive energy, and it's amazing how if you continually use humor, you can go, you know, you can have the worst week of your life, you could be sick, all the kids can be sick, you can have bills up the wazoo, and, you know, really have one of those weeks where maybe you're not the best teacher in the world, and still, I've noticed that perception of a great classroom carries over. And no one walks in all depressed, and no one walks in and they're like, oh my God, not another day of whatever. And it really carries over. You know, you can kind of like bank brownie points with every piece of humor that you use in the classroom. The other thing it does is it allows you, I think, to assess everyone's mental state real quick. And again, not always, but usually I'll start off with some kind of story in class, some kind of personal story. Sometimes I might add a little bit to it to make it a little bit more humorous than it was in real life. But by watching everyone's eyes and body, I can tell which kids are having a bad day. You know, once you get to know your kids, if you open up with a joke at the beginning of the class, that kid who's normally smiling all of a sudden is not. You know, that's the kid that maybe in class you got to focus on, or after class a simple, hey, what's going on? You know, and it also draws in those kids who are quiet, draws in those kids who are very shy, and they might not become talkers in your class, and I don't believe that a kid has to talk a lot in class to be engaged. It drives me crazy at conferences when a teacher will say, you know, I wish your kid doesn't talk very much in class, or they're really rather quiet. That doesn't mean anything. Being quiet doesn't mean you're not engaged, and although, I mean, obviously sometimes it does. But if you want to draw in those quiet kids, humor will do that. And I think what is so interesting is that every year there's a kid who doesn't say a word in class that at some point I realize through some kind of comment or written paper, or they come back and visit after graduation, that kid was engaged nonstop. And I think humor is something that helped that kid do that. I was actually hiking in a state park yesterday with my daughter, and I met a girl that she must have graduated 4 or 5 years ago. Very first thing she said to me is, "Hey, Mr. Bogish." And I said, "Hey," because I couldn't really remember her name. I got it now, but I didn't get it at that second. She goes, are you still showing the video of your daughter eating the ribs? I couldn't believe it. The one thing she remembered was, you know, this one funny video that I opened up class with one day. And I thought that was just kind of interesting. All right. So, as we get on with humor, it's another thing is it's important to realize that it's not how many jokes you tell. You know, and again, in research, the person who elicits the most laughter does not get the most academic achievement or highest rating from their students. It's the well-placed joke that makes a difference. And again, when I'm talking difference, I'm not just talking, you can go out and you can read the research. It changes the academic performance of kids. You know, it changes stress level, it changes hormone level, it changes blood flow, it changes ability to endure pain. I mean, there's the research is out there. You know, that teacher who is always delivering that random, out-of-place joke, yeah, it might make kids crack up, but it's not helping out achievement or classroom relationships at all. So it's got to be a well-placed joke. And you know, research shows that actually the teachers that get the highest ratings and the classes that have the highest performance, I know this was a college research done on a college course. I don't know how long the course was, but it was 3 to 4 jokes, 3 to 4 pieces of humor throughout the class. Got the best ratings and the highest achievement. So, I mean, you don't have to be a comedian up there nonstop. It could just be a few things here and there. The other thing I love using humor for, and I've lost track of whether or not I actually already said this, is those tense situations. You know, two kids are going to get into a fight. Someone has just decided to tell you off in the middle of class. If you don't get mad, if you don't all of a sudden just like let your emotions roll and say, this is my class and you should not have been yelling at me, and you approach the situation with humor, amazing how it's diffused so quickly. The kid is less likely to do it in the future. And the one that is just the classic example that comes to my mind is I walked into my homeroom one day and there was these two kids, two big boys, ready to fight. And my first school I was at for 10 years, I mean, breaking up fights was kind of part of the job description. At my new job in the burbs, I'd be lucky to have said that I've seen, I don't even think I've actually seen an actual fight carry through, but this one I thought might be my first one. Two big boys in the room going, you know, chest to chest and doing that thing where they kind of bounce off one another. I was like, oh man, not first thing in the morning. So I stood up on top of a desk right next to him, and I yelled at him, and I said, every time one of you throws a punch, I'm taking off a piece of clothing, and I don't care if I'm standing up here naked, and you guys are bloody, I'm going to do it. Well, you couldn't hold a straight face. The two kids laughed. You know, they didn't want to, but both of them kind of started to laugh. And then, of course, as soon as they laughed, they both shared that common experience, and everybody else around them is laughing. Nobody can go back to fighting after that. And they both kind of looked at one another and went back to their seats, and that truly was the end of it. I don't know if it went any farther than that afterwards. I didn't hear anything. But, you know, I could have thrown them apart, written up the referral, sent them to the office. They're both still angry. They both still have issues. The entire class now is set off for the day, and they all got issues. And, you know, the story of the day ended up not being the fight, but me threatening to get naked in front of the class. Hey, whatever for peace, man, you know? So anyway, again, this is a podcast about humor. You gotta be funny. I'm sorry, you don't got to be funny. You don't have to be funny. But I encourage you to use more humor in the class. And I think I'll end it here. There's a lot of other stuff I wanted to get into, more researchable, scientific stuff. But I think I've hit my mark. I will leave you with one personal story about the power of humor. 3 years ago or so, it was 3 years ago, we had a student in class commit suicide. Not in class, it was at home. And it was a kid who was important to the fabric of our team. Not that any kid is not, but this particular student was really intertwined into the fabric of our team, and very popular person for all the good, right reasons. And obviously when we came back the next day, you know, the depression that swept over the class was immense and deep, and it was hard to function. And it was hard to function the next day. And on the third day, you know, I was pretty much at a loss. I'm not exactly a great person for dealing with other person's emotions. I'm a very much suck it up and get it on sort of thing, although maybe more with myself, not necessarily with others. I didn't know what to do. And, you know, I had spent 2 days listening and listening and listening and, you know, as we all did, everyone on the team. And everybody was sharing stories, and I don't think anybody could see the end to where this was going. And I walked in on that third day, and I simply said to the class that I had, and I think we had pretty much stopped exchanging classes, or we were exchanging classes at midday or something like that. And I said, today, I give you permission to laugh. Everyone kind of looked at me funny. I said, today I give you permission to laugh. And I sat back and I told them some story that, you know, it wasn't an obnoxious funny story, but it was a humorous story. I turned on the Three Stooges, you know, the little baseball routine, and we watched that. I put in some other comedy movie that had a lot of humor in it. And I think, you know, on that day, I felt a lot of kids start to heal. And again, it wasn't an obnoxious sort of humor. It wasn't an obnoxious, in-your-face sort of thing. But I really do believe in the healing effect of humor. You know, the person who might have started this whole theory of humor being healing is a guy named Norm Cousins. He had cancer, geez, I think it was maybe in the 60s. And as his own self-induced treatment, he had the doctors and nurses bring him hours of comedies, and he'd watch them for 2 hours straight, or I can't remember how long. And he realized that the humor changed his body so that he didn't need as many drugs, and it served as a painkiller, and eventually he was cured. And I know for those of you classically Western-trained, Western minds, you think that is a bunch of garbage, and I'm sure if, you know, you read all the other studies of the power of humor and the power of positive mental thoughts, you would just say it's a bunch of junk, and you would debunk it immediately. And I'm sure that, you know, there's a lot of, if you've gotten to this podcast from the 2.0 tools technology standpoint, you know, researching, you know, on whatever Podomatic or iTunes, I end up in that category. You think that that's a bunch of garbage, and you probably think the whole thing on humor is a bunch of garbage, but you know, I don't think it is. So I'll leave you with that. I'll tell you, I'm sitting here looking across the lake, and as soon as I started reciting that last story about that girl who committed suicide, I know that you might just think this is a coincidence, and I don't know where I fall, but this gorgeous little fawn walked out of the woods and is now grazing by the edge of the lake in front of me. Just one little baby. And I think that's pretty cool. All right. So, thank you again for listening to the podcast that I call Turkey Crossing. And even though I've considered changing the name a few times, I think I'm going to stick with it. And hey, again, if you've made it this far, leave me a comment, would you? I'd be interested to know what you're thinking. And I'll tell you, I have gotten some pretty nice words from people lately, and the ones that have hit me or have been the most important have been from the ex-students that I've had who have found me accidentally or purposefully or or wherever they found me. But the kind words, if you're a student out there and you've left some kind words on the comment page, thank you so much. For some reason, out of all the people in the country and the world, actually, that have left some kind of comments or made some kind of suggestion, the words from you guys mean the most to me. And so thank you, and keep on doing what you're doing. And all right, I gotta hop back on my bike and get home, man. I don't even know what time it is. So thanks for listening again. Made it this far. Leave a comment. This is Paul Bogish signing out. And join me again this week, would you? Next one will be just a short one. I have an idea for it. It will be a short, quick one. So, hey, see you later. Bye-bye.
Think popcorn, think picnics, think songs you like to sing. Think happy, and life's a happy thing. Think hopscotch, think chipmunks, think puppets on a string. Yet try two apple pies. Think fireworks, think hot dogs, think daffodils.